The history of television is a history of failure.
For every television series that lasted years and years, there were dozens that lasted only one season or less.
But did they deserve to die? Or were they canceled too soon?
Everybody, and welcome back to Canceled Too Soon, the podcast where we review television series that lasted only one season or less. My name is William Bibbiani. I am a critic. Everybody calls me Bibbs.
My name is Whitney Seibold. I, too, am a critic. I don't need a nickname.
Yeah.
And
but I'm going to call you Zeus anyway.
It was the name of one of my cats growing up.
Nice. I chose well.
Yeah. There was that game that people would play online. What's your porn star name?
Oh, yeah.
And it was the...
It was the name of your pet and the street you grew up on.
The first pet you remember having and the street you grew up on. And that's not a lot of fun if you had grew up on, like, 164th Street.
Yeah.
My two childhood pets were two large black cats. They were named Zeus and Mercury. Okay. And we grew up on Euclid Street. So
Zeus Euclid.
So yeah, my porn star name was Zeus Euclid. Yeah, very, very Greek sound.
Mine was Rio Hill.
Rio Hill's not bad.
That's not bad. That sounds kind of legit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But we're not here to talk about porn.
No, in fact, we're here to talk about something very kind of
innocent and sweet.
Yeah, twee and mannered.
We're here to talk about a television series from Jerry and Sylvia Anderson. And I think a lot of Americans are either unaware of Jerry and Sylvia Anderson or maybe only hazily aware of them because it was a bit more of a British phenomenon, their particular cadre of television shows.
It was definitely way bigger in the Isles. Over here in the United States, it was sort of like Doctor Who. Yeah. We got a few British imports, but they played on like public television at weird hours.
Yeah, there were definitely people who saw stuff like Thunderbirds is probably their best known series.
Yeah.
A lot of people probably saw that show and remember it somewhat fondly, but... Yeah, they also did a ton of other stuff. Jerry and Sylvia Anderson did a lot of television programs that were done in a form called Super Marionation, which is not exactly puppets, but puppets that had like electronic moving parts. They were a little bit mechanized. It was a very particular style where they looked almost like Uncanny Valley, like they were made to look pretty realistic.
Well, it depended on which show. Some of the puppets done in Super Marionation did have like very exaggerated features. Like you look at the Thunderbirds, they're clearly their own design. And they're kind of cartoonish. They have like bigger eyes and larger heads. The show we're talking about today, however, they used much more realistic human proportions to the point where a lot of long shots, you could swear they're using live-action actors.
And indeed, a couple of them, they definitely are.
Well... The Secret Service that we're talking about today...
Oh, by the way, we're talking about the Secret Service. Right.
Criminals are motivated by greed.
They're a devious black...
But Father Stanley Unwin answers to a higher source.
Yes, indeed, we must remember that.
Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Magnificent.
He's a man of considerable ability.
A very forceful addition to anyone's army.
Whose greatest assets are an honest face...
Why am I telling you all this?
...and the Minimizer, a top-secret shrinking device...
Let's just call it a miracle.
With the help of his trusted assistant, Matthew, Father Unwin fights the big crimes in a small way.
It will require a very unorthodox approach.
Join the crime fighter who's one of a kind in The Secret Service.
The Secret Service, which we're talking about today. Sorry, I just completely threw the intro.
When you say the name, you activate the clip.
Fine. Golly, and we're also going to be talking about The Secret Diary of Desmond Pfeiffer.
No!
If you think Monty Python is outrageous, if you think Saturday Night Live is controversial,
the president having sex with someone who works in the White House, preposterous,
then you're ready for something completely different.
Daddy's going to get some sugar.
The Secret Diary of Desmond Pfeiffer, a comedy set in the White House, the Lincoln White House.
Desmond, I've come to value your opinion. What do you think I should do? I'd connect that beard with a mustache.
Premieres Monday, October 5th on the United Paramount Network.
We can't find that show, actually.
We've been looking for that show for so long. Occasionally one episode. Occasionally one episode like pops up on YouTube or something. But we have never been able to find the complete series. And until we can find the complete series, we can't do The Secret Diary of Desmond Pfeiffer. If you have it, let us know.
If you have it, first of all, tell us why you have it. And then secondly...
Probably for the same reason we do, which is historical archiving purposes.
Weird oddity. But to the Secret Service...
Can't believe you did that to us.
The Secret Service was a little bit unusual in that Jerry and Sylvia Anderson would film live-action actors for a lot of it, but only in long shots, like when we see somebody getting in and out of a car.
Yeah, something would just be really too complicated to do. Like, long shots are difficult to do with puppets because you can see all around them.
Super Marionation, they were marionettes. Mm-hmm. So... they couldn't pass through doorways. That was a problem with Super Marionation. You'll notice nobody entered a room. You always saw them standing in a doorway, and then they say, "Hey, can I come in?" And there'd be like an opposite shot. Yeah, you can come in, and the camera would drift in.
Bless you.
Excuse me. So yeah, they couldn't very well get in and out of a car. And they actually couldn't walk around too much. There's a really great... sketch comedy bit from, I think it's from Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, where they made fun of this Jerry and Sylvia Anderson stuff just by enacting the actions of the puppets, because they had such limited action and they could like bend their elbow, but they couldn't like pick things up. It wasn't very sophisticated movement. Right. And indeed, the faces were very static, and I think a lot of people react negatively to that.
Well, again, because a lot of people look at a doll, like a realistic looking doll, and they get kind of weirded out because it looks kind of right, but it's wrong. It's like weird and still and plasticky.
The mouths would open, but they'd barely open. Like the bottom lip of the puppets would kind of vibrate open and closed a little bit.
Yeah,
and then they'd have an actor dub it over. The heads were pretty well, like the necks were pretty well articulated. You could turn and tilt their heads, but there weren't like eyebrows. They had swiveling eyes, maybe. And this was the deal with Jerry and Sylvia Anderson and their whole Super Marionation shtick.
Yeah, and they did a lot of different programs.
I was a big fan of Thunderbirds growing up. I got to see bits and pieces of them, however, only on American television. I saw like some Fireball XL5. One that I caught up with many years after the fact was Joe 90, which is a show I'd love to do on Cancel Too Soon, but it ran for like 30 episodes, so it was a little bit more difficult to
schedule. And again, this is another instance where British television works a little differently than it does in America, which is one of the reasons why we're always pretty hesitant to do international shows, because they don't necessarily... they're not all necessarily designed to last longer than one season. Yeah. And a lot of Super Marionation shows lasted only one season by design. And in the case of The Secret Service, the show was actually canceled halfway through its initial run. It was supposed to run for 26 episodes.
Oh.
But instead it only ran for 13. And it ran for 13 because the producer saw the show that they were making, didn't understand it, and decided to can it. This particular series from Jerry and Sylvia Anderson is built around a celebrity.
That's right.
It's not a completely original creation. The idea is there was an incredibly popular comedian named Stanley Unwin who had a shtick, and they built an entire series specifically around that shtick. And that shtick was called, often, Unwinese.
Well, his shtick, Unwinese, was that he would, and this is something Victor Borge did. There are a lot of comedians who were known for this sort of thing, where they would kind of invent a language or a patois. Victor Borge was very good about just sort of like making up gibberish language. Yeah. Like he just sort of mumbled, but it sounded kind of like a mixture of Dutch and German, but it was just nonsense. Stanley Unwin essentially invented this weird sideways version of like rhyming slang where it sounds like you can kind of understand what he's getting at, but a lot of it is just nonsense words.
Yeah. Sometimes it was called gobbledygook. There was another name for it I found. Hang on. Basic Angly 20 Fido. was another name for his language. The idea is that, yeah, you can kind of, when he says it, and he says it so fast, he's not hyper enunciating it so that you'll get what he's doing. Mm. He's just speeding through a monologue. And the monologue contains snippets of words you recognize, but they'll be somehow mangled, they'll be turned into a verb, or he'll add syllables to them. I'm going to pick a, there's a bit that's on, for example, Wikipedia. It's on his Wikipedia page. He did a talk on music called Populode of the Musicali. And I will not be able to do this the way Stanley Unwin does this. So I'm not even going to try.
It's his bit.
It's his bit. It's his. He knew exactly how to pronounce it, how to sell it. I'm not going to be able to do the accent, so I'm not even going to try. I'm just going to read you a brief clip just so you can get a sense of what it's like. They do, in fact, go back to the Ethelreber's Unready, King Albert's Burnt Capers, where, you know, the toast fell in, the dear lady did get a very cross knit and smote him across the eardrum Excalibald.
Well done.
You heard some of that, right? Yeah, you can kind of get a sense of, like, where he's going with it. But other than just the idea that he's droning on about a topic, mm-hmm. you can't actually tell what he's saying.
There were bits like this in Monty Python's Flying Circus, mm-hmm. but they were making fun of... like pilot slang.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I got hit right up the house, your father. The cabbage crates are coming over the briny. It's like, and they would, and of course they'd stop. No, I don't understand that one.
Yeah.
That one went a little too far.
So anyway, Stanley Unwin, he had done some movies. He had done a lot of different albums and radio shows. And for whatever reason, and I don't actually have a lot of information about the genesis of the Secret Service. I wasn't able to find, like, any particular story about exactly where the notion came from or why exactly they did it in this specific format. But they had an idea to take Stanley Unwin, a known comedian with a shtick, and make him into a priest. Mm. He's now Father Stanley Unwin, has his own name. And, of course, he's a puppet. He's a super marionated puppet. But he's not just a priest. That probably would have been enough. Mm. Stanley Unwin is a priest. I'll watch that sitcom. That sounds funny. But instead, they decided that Stanley Unwin was a priest who was a secret undercover agent of the British government in an organization called Bishop. And Bishop was an acronym that I forgot to write down.
British Intelligence.
Secret Headquarters.
Secret Headquarters Operation Priest.
Yeah. So the idea is he's an undercover priest. And if you think about it...
That's a great premise.
That's not a bad premise because priests are considered relatively unassuming. It's not uncommon to see one anywhere you go.
And
you know, they stand out because like they wear what they wear, but nobody really thinks too much of them. They are considered most of the time to be peaceful, quiet,
kind of unassuming,
very unassuming. Definitely not someone who's here to start a ruckus. They also do things like, you know, talk to themselves. So there's a gag where Stanley Unwin, Father Stanley Unwin...
He wears a hearing aid, but it's actually a secret radio.
Yeah, so this allows him to constantly be in communication with his commanding officer, called the Bishop, and to take orders and to respond. And there is an elderly lady who takes care of the parish where he works, and every once in a while she overhears him taking orders from high command. And she says, "Did you say something, Father?" "Oh, yes, I was just speaking."
I was just praying.
Yes, I was
speaking
just
to the Lord.
Speaking to someone far away. And she says, "Yes, I understand, Father. I understand." Holy thou art.
I guess he couldn't lie because he's a priest.
Yeah, but, yeah. It's in a weird position, isn't it?
Talking to someone far away. Yeah. Now, I'm pretty sure that it's like pretty ethically dodgy to be a clergyman who works for a specific government.
The Vatican City is a government. For that. I'd love it if they had their own spies. You ever hear about
about that in Hudson Hawk.
Hudson
Hawk is 100% reality.
I forgot about that documentary, Hudson Hawk. Yes. But regardless, you're right.
Frederick Wiseman's Hudson Hawk.
You're absolutely right. They did use that as a shtick. So yeah. That you're right. There is a movie where they do that, and that's a knock is underrated. It's fair enough.
But I know I don't know the fineries and like sort of the ins and outs of the Church of England.
Yeah.
And how it sort of, if it ties in with the English government at all.
Well, it is, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't it the official Church of England? So maybe
the Church of England is
the official, so one could argue, at least in a comic book way.
Sponsored
religion, well, I guess my point is in a comic book way, if you wanted to do a fictional story. Like, for example, She-Hulk is about to become a television series on Disney Plus, and I'm very excited because it's based on a good version of the comic I was a big, big fan of. And one of the gags in that version of the comic was that She-Hulk was a lawyer who handled cases involving superheroes and supervillains, but there weren't a lot of legal precedents for that. However, for the vast majority of Marvel Comics history, Marvel Comics were released with a Comics Code Authority stamp, which was an actual symbol of the American government, which basically notarized all those comics. And anything that happened in a comic with a Comics Code Authority is admissible in court.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because it's officially from the government.
Oh, that's really funny.
That was the gag. So if you could at least, if you wanted to, pursue that in a meta-fictional sort of text. Right. But in any case, so the idea is Stanley Unwin is a priest and he goes on adventures. However, it doesn't stop there. That is a perfectly reasonable setup for a somewhat satirical spy show. And then they decided to go just a little weirder. Because
this is actually kind of a clever twist, and we'll get to it.
It's clever in a way, but in a vacuum, it's a weird addition to the story. But for the Supermarion Nation element, it is clever, and I'll give you that. Stanley Unwin doesn't use a gun. He actually only has one big device, other than a Model T he calls Gabriel for some reason. Presumably a religious thing.
After the Archangel.
I guess. You know.
Are there any other famous Gabriels you know about?
Peter Gabriel.
That's Peter.
If you know him well, I don't think Stanley Unwin knows him well. You'd call him Mr. Gabriel, or just Gabriel in a sort of an official context. Listen, we're going to let this go. Anyway.
If I meet Peter Gabriel, I will call him Mr. Gabriel.
Okay, fine. Gabriel Byrne it is. So, in any case, the other gag is he has an assistant named Matthew, and Matthew's cover is he is the groundskeeper at the parish. He handles all of the gardening and all of the little busy work around the place.
And he's generic, handsome, blonde man.
Yeah.
With a cleft chin.
And whenever there's a mission, Father Parish says, well, Matthew, we've got work to do, and they go up to their private room. Father Unwin takes out a book, and inside the book there is a gadget, a gizmo. A device, if you will. And he presses a couple of buttons, and then Matthew shrinks to 1 foot tall.
He shrinks to the size, conveniently enough, of a Jerry and Sylvie Anderson puppet.
Yeah.
So they can take the same puppet and put it in sort of the life-size props.
Yeah, which saves them a lot of money on locations
and
things, too.
Hide him in bags and stuff, yeah.
So the idea is Father Unwin has a suitcase, and inside that suitcase is like a little cockpit.
Spy easy chair with like spy portals and stuff.
Yeah, and it's got a like robotic matrix or whatever like that that like pushes the chair out so you can get in, and then the chair slides into it, and he's got like computer readouts, and he can like see outside the briefcase. And wherever Stanley Unwin goes, he takes the briefcase and then he just conveniently sets it down. Then a 1 foot tall super spy walks out, and then he goes off on various missions doing 1 foot tall super spy stuff and radioing Stanley Unwin for assistance whenever necessary. That's weird.
It's a weird thing. The shrinking is like the one fantasy element of this.
Yeah, it comes out of nowhere. We're not going to explain that? No, here's the explanation for the shrinking device. Someone invented it. That's it. Someone invented that shit.
What I love about the technology in Supermarionation shows.
Yeah.
And I'm not deeply experienced, but I've seen some.
Yeah. You've seen more than I have. This is actually the first one I've ever seen more than like one episode of.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is like throughout Sylvie and Jerry Anderson stuff presented completely matter-of-factly. The Thunderbirds just have those They just have those big planes and ships and submarines that they can ride around in.
True, but Thunderbirds takes place in a larger-than-life universe where there's all kinds of super sci-fi stuff. It's kind of like an anime series like Gatchaman or something.
Yeah, you know, they just have Supercar. They just have Fireball XL5. Yeah.
But the difference is that this one is a real world except there's this gadget.
And which is a little different. Well, Joe 90, the one I mentioned earlier... that's another spy show, and their secret agent is like a 9-year-old boy. That's Joe 90.
Ah.
And in order to train him for to be a spy, like, they don't put him through spy school. They just put him in this big, gigantic rotating machine, and that feeds information directly into his brain.
Ah.
So he has the information for the spy mission.
Okay.
And no one would suspect a boy. So I feel like the Secret Service and Joe 90 are really dealing with a similar shtick.
Well, Joe 90 is also... I think Joe 90 is a little cleaner, though, because the fantasy is, I'm a little kid, I want to go on spy missions.
But I don't know how to do spy stuff.
Yeah, the only thing stopping me is I don't know how. And so if you just teach me how, I could do it, and then I get to go on spy missions. So that's... It's a little elaborate, but it's a clean fantasy. Here, the fantasy is... What if my favorite comedian was a priest who was working for the government and occasionally shrank a guy to help him? I never really had that fantasy. It's never been a daydream I really had.
I do now after watching this completely delightful show. the word I used was twee, and I think that's even a word Sylvie Anderson used to describe a lot of this stuff was twee. Sylvie Anderson acted on the show. I'm not sure if Jerry did.
To the best of my knowledge,
I
don't know.
I think this one was a little bit more Sylvia was in charge of this one. They worked on their shows together. Jerry Anderson was credited as like the sole creator for the longest time because sexism. But they both he and Sylvia worked on all of their shows from what
very
I understand.
Very directly involved,
Sylvia Anderson played Penelope, Lady Penelope in Thunderbirds.
Okay.
Did you see any Thunderbirds, any of the movies?
When I was a kid, I saw the movie or I saw a couple episodes.
Did you see
something.
The Jonathan Frakes movie?
No, I never saw all of it. I saw little bits of it on TV. Didn't seem very good, so I just never sat down with it.
I like the weird sort of candy-colored aesthetic of that movie.
I appreciated that. That looked neat.
But yeah, it's not well-written or paced or acted or anything like that. Mm. They tried to make it a little, weirdly elaborate.
Yeah. I remember who else was in that besides Bill Paxton was the dad in that one.
Yeah, well, the plot was all of the Bradys, or Tracys, excuse me, the Tracy siblings were kidnapped. Like the actual main Thunderbirds were taken out of commission. It was up to like the young rebellious teenage character to rescue them and fight out against the villain played by Ben Kingsley.
Oh, music by Hans Zimmer and Ramin Djawadi, who did Game of Thrones. So that's a hell of a pedigree, actually. I should watch this. Anyway.
And the Thunderbirds theme song is pretty epic. Notable.
The theme song, by the way, to Secret Service is great. It's been one of my favorite things about this show. It's really, really cool.
It's a cappella.
It's a cappella.
With like a little drum beat behind it.
It's a cappella, and it's really propulsive, but it's also very light, and it's just like...
It sounds like the Swingle Singers, if you're familiar with the Swingle Singers.
Yeah.
Ward Swingle, this guy in 1960. Formed a choral group, and they do... vocal approximations of a lot of classical pieces, but they've also done a lot of jazz, and they put out a Beatles record. Listen to the Swingle Singers' rendition of the 1812 Overture, where they approximate all the canons vocally. It's pretty cool.
That's fun. Basically every episode of the Secret Service is, there's a cold open with some kind of spy shit going on, and then we do the opening credits, and then Stanley Unwin is called into action, he shrinks Matthew, they go off into action, Matthew does some cool stuff, Unwin does some funny stuff, and at some point in every episode... there is an excuse for Stanley Unwin to do Unwinese. Usually it's he has to stall for time while Matthew defuses a bomb or, sets up some kind of important spy shit. Sometimes he has to just befuddle someone in order to, like, get through security or convince them that he's someone he's not. Basically, there's at least one bit in every episode with some Unwinese. And then, yeah, and then they solve crimes. And that's basically every single episode. There were 13 episodes, and we're gonna walk through them. They're pretty straightforward for the most part, so this is not going to be super elaborate, I think. But we'll walk you through every episode, because that's what we do. The first episode was called A Case for the Bishop. It aired in September 21st, 1969. And at the beginning of the episode, a high-tech computer called the KX-20 is stolen. And it is up to Father Stanley Unwin and Matthew to get it back, because the British government can't go through normal channels. It was stolen by someone with, and if you've seen Lethal Weapon 2, you know how I'm going to say this, diplomatic immunity! Which is one of the great plot points. And I love it when anyone uses it. Diplomatic immunity is an idea that, and it's true, if you are a diplomat in an official diplomat, like you're actually like named
hired
a diplomat.
By a country, yeah.
Yeah, I am the representative of America to France or whatever. There is extended to you, and there are limits to this, there is extended to you some leniency in the law.
Hmm.
You have diplomatic immunity so that, like, you know, if you park your car wrong, they can't give you a ticket.
You're not going to be, like, tied to a ticket back in this country. You're off the hook.
There's a certain amount of diplomatic immunity. Some slack is cut for you out of a political courtesy. It doesn't mean you get to kill people.
No.
It doesn't extend that far. But there are lots of movies and comic books in which it does. In the villain in Lethal Weapon 2.
We couldn't arrest him because he had diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, Lethal Weapon 2 does not make sense. It makes sense, like, in a fun comic booky kind of way. Dr. Doom enjoyed diplomatic immunity for many years in the comics, because as the fascist dictator of Latveria, he was also the country's sole diplomat, so wherever he went, he had diplomatic immunity, which is really fun in a Marvel comic book.
I'd love to see him at the UN.
Yeah. I have used my shrinking ray, and I have shrunk everyone here at the UN, so that Latveria will have the biggest seat at the table in every Security Council. You can't do that. Diplomatic immunity. Okay, you can. Shit, can we do that? You could if you wanted. I was the one who did it first.
I think it was in the very first episode where Father Unwin just lets the veil drop. He's pulled over by a cop.
Yeah.
And he drives a Model T. It's sort of this quaint, old-fashioned car.
Yeah.
It looks like the 1928 Porter from My Mother the Car.
Yeah, it's bright yellow instead of red.
Notable. Like, it's clearly his car.
It's very pretty. And they had a model version of it as well that they used for some shots with the puppets. And then there's a bit
size of it where they could film it driving down the streets of London.
And then there's one episode later on we'll talk about where they actually shrink the Model T, so you get to see it driving around the street like a remote controlled car. That's cool. That's fun.
But he gets pulled over, and he just explains to the cop, oh yes, I'm a priest, and I'm on my way doing priestly things. And the cop is very polite. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, I'll let you go about. And, hey, can we talk for a minute? It's okay, I guess we'll talk for a minute, Mr. Policeman. And then he finally says, you know what, I need to stop talking because actually I'm a spy, and I'm working for the government, and I'm on my way to a secret mission. And the cop's like, oh shit. Oh, okay, well, let's go then. So he's not a very good spy.
Well, didn't he do that in Unwinese, though? So the guy's only hazily aware of, like, what he was saying?
No, he said it very clearly.
Okay, I watched this show a little earlier than you did. I think it's fresher in your head. Because I saw it, like, I finished it a few days ago. You just finished it now.
Well, I was watching it late at night, so it's kind of also mixed up with, you know, tiredness.
Fair enough. But yeah, it's one of those things where we're only taking this so seriously. But they do. They're able to. It's actually kind of an interesting, clever kind of concept. The diplomat with the stolen computer is like exiting the country on an airplane, and Matthew stows away in the airplane and sabotages the airplane so that it has to land in a really tiny airport right next to like Father Unwin's parish, so he can be right there. And then he like threatens to shrink him, and it's really fucking weird. But they do. They get the computer back, and Bob's your uncle, and everyone's super happy. Next up is A Question of Miracles. And that's one where
they have to protect a factory. It's a
desalinization
plant. That's right.
Desalinization is the act of removing salt from seawater so that it becomes drinkable. Which, you know, is useful, but actually really complicated. It takes a lot of space. So it's kind of a big deal to have a good desalinization plant, but someone keeps blowing them up, but they make it look like it's like a factory error. Like every time, like they've been online for like 250 minutes, they just blow up.
I admit, I have an incredible weakness for miniature factories exploding on film.
Well, is this the show for you?
Yeah, is it? Oh gosh, my inner 8-year-old was so happy watching this. I got the same thrill watching the Secret Service as I do watching like early Godzilla movies, where you know a guy in a Godzilla suit's just stomping around in those little buildings. That is way better than whatever CGI you got.
Well, fair enough, and it's a tactile thing.
Yeah. Like it's not something you could do, but you kind of can picture what's going on.
Well, you can. It's like something you could do at an amusement park or something. Like, okay, here you go. You waited in line. Now you're going to put on the Godzilla suit and get to destroy the city. And when you're done, the city kind of like reinflates or something like that, so the next person can destroy it. Like you can just imagine doing it yourself.
Yeah, you can
see the pieces. You can see, you know, that when a building blows up in Super Mario Nation, it's clearly like the size of a shoebox and made of the same material. And when it burns wrong.
Like the fire is clearly much larger than fire.
Yeah. And in that episode, guess what? Hmm. Stanley Unwin and Matthew stop the bad guys. Moving on. Is there anything else about that episode that's noteworthy? I can't really remember anything noteworthy about that one.
The thing with the episodes of the Secret Service is, apart from one or two, there's not really like a story that stands out. A lot of this is pretty boilerplate spy stuff.
Yeah. So except for the shrinky dude.
The premise and the characters are carrying this entirely.
Yeah.
Because the writing isn't clever. It's just about.
And it's very formulaic.
Yeah. It's incredible. And you know, it is sort of a Saturday morning United States version of Saturday morning thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if this aired on Saturday mornings in England.
I actually don't have the time slot on this. I don't think it was. I think it was prime time.
This was 1969, by the way. I don't think we gave the actual
stats on this. Yeah, it aired from September 20th, 1969 to December 14th, 1969. And it aired on ITV, which had a series of, it wasn't just like one station. It was on like a different series of affiliates. There was like 13 of them. And for whatever reason, this only aired on like some of those stations.
Yeah, like it aired in Granada.
Yeah, it aired in like a fraction of the actual number of channels it could have aired on. So the ratings were really low. Yeah, you're right. And it is definitely has a childlike mentality to it, whether or not it was intended for children.
What I appreciate, though, is that it... Here's sort of the magic of Jerry and Sylvia Anderson stuff.
Yes, tell me the magic.
Well, it's toys. Little kids want to watch this, not because there's some kind of weird angle to it. I mean, there are weird angles to it, and you're interested in sort of the shrinking machines.
It's not because they're necessarily riveted by the characters and storyline.
Exactly. Yeah. The stories need to remain kind of basic because the thrill is watching dolls do it. The Super Marionation is incredibly fun to look at. No matter how static they are, how stony the face is, or how kind of uncanny it is, especially when they get like live action actors in reverse and then they cut to like the facial shot and it's a doll and it's a little bit unnerving for a second.
Yeah.
The parts where we see close-ups of actors' hands like pushing buttons, that's the part that always creeped me out a little bit.
Yeah, it's always weird, and they do it
But
they do it for close-ups of hands. Mm-hmm. They do it for long shots. There's one shot in the opening credits of actual Stanley Unwin, like looking out a window.
Yeah, live action.
And I get it. He's famous. You want to make sure people recognize that it's actually him. But at the same time, you are fucking with my sense of reality. I don't want much. I just want it to be somewhat.
That's okay.
I just want it to be somewhat consistent. Mm. It doesn't need to make sense. I just want it to be consistent. So that is this a universe where everyone is puppets, or is it just the style? But why is the style inconsistent so that sometimes they're not puppets? I don't understand. I'm watching this and I'm trying to figure out the logic of it the way I'm trying to figure out like the logic of the Cars movies.
Yeah.
Which is to say, I'm doing it wrong. And I understand that, for example, when this is, you know, more of American, but when Pixar does the Cars movies, and these are movies in which everything in the universe is a car, every living organism aside from a plant is a car.
Even bugs are Volkswagen Beetles.
Yeah, get it? there's no internal logic to that. There's no explanation. Like, there's this old theory that goes that, like, you know, there was a nuclear holocaust and all of humanity died, but all of the modern cars had onboard computers and they achieved sentience and tried to keep society going in the image of man, even when it didn't make sense for cars. And that's the best I got, but man, it does not track. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It's deeply confusing.
Well, luckily, this isn't like some weird post-apocalyptic future where people now look like puppets. This
agreed.
Is,
I'm just saying.
This, like, is a, it takes, like, place in reality. It just has some fantasy elements, some spy stories, and just it's realized with puppets.
Well, that's my point. It's that Cars isn't actually meant to be unlocked.
Yeah.
Cars is meant to just sort of be appreciated by a fanciful mind, like kids playing with toys. And I think Super Mario Nation works kind of the same way, where there isn't an internal logic to it. It's just kind of neat.
Yeah.
And we would like you to just go with it. Like, there's that YouTube series, Pitch Meeting.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was Ryan George. Yeah, and there's a bit in almost every pitch meeting, and all of these are bits where some guy pitches some big Hollywood movie. And all of the things that don't work about it are part of the original pitch. Like, they were part of the selling point.
That's kind of the joke.
Yeah.
And if Ryan George plays both the executive and the screenwriter, so he's kind of grilling himself.
And like,
doesn't that make not make no sense, whatever, this weird plot point?
And then he will say in almost every episode, I'm going to need you to get all the way off my back about that.
You're going to have to get off my back about that one. Or he'll just say, well, this needs to happen because the movie. Oh, okay, that makes sense. And the executive rolls with all of these bad decisions.
Right, but the thing is that there are certain instances in which I'm going to need you to get off my back about that is actually a legitimate response when that's the premise.
Mm.
If you don't accept the premise, we have nothing to talk about.
Yeah. Really.
So if it's one thing if it's like actually vital, but on some level, if you can't handle that Super Mario Nation has puppets, if you can't handle that the Cars movies take place in a world where everything is cars, you are not in the right theater.
Yeah.
You are not watching the right show. You're going to need to get all the way off my back about that. Mm. And that's your problem, not mine.
Yeah.
So I had to train myself, because I never really watched a lot of Super Mario Nation, to stop that. Like, to turn off that, like, part of my brain that tried to, like, unlock and, like, make this logical.
Canonize it in some way.
And honestly, medium success at most. Like, I struggle with these shows. I appreciate them. I can't get immersed in them. I can't just thoroughly enjoy them. There's always a part of me that's sort of just like, yeah, but that wouldn't work. Yeah, but why are you not a puppet now? Why are we... Be a puppet! Do it! Stop not being puppets sometimes. It's weird. Anyway.
I don't know what your problem is, man. I can watch a puppet show and just enjoy the puppet. What about the Muppets? You, like, you know, you accept their reality, right?
Because they're consistent. Mm-hmm. Kermit isn't sometimes just a dude.
But sometimes Kermit is, like, on a bike or something.
Yeah, but it's still
sometimes
a puppet.
Sometimes we see his legs and sometimes we don't.
I don't mind seeing his legs. It's a little weird sometimes, I'll grant you. Like, you don't always think about him. But no, but he's never just, like, a guy in a Kermit suit.
Yeah,
there's one moment in Muppets Take Manhattan where Miss Piggy is clearly someone in a costume running through Central Park.
Okay.
And it freaks me the fuck out. That is not right. You are not supposed to do that. That is wrong.
They've hired stunt performers for all of the Child's Play movies.
Yeah, because, once in a while, it's like a little person or a
Chucky,
kid in a suit.
Yeah, Chucky is, in close-ups, he's animatronic. And Don Mancini, the creator of Child's Play, has been very insistent that he remain animatronic, that he's never CGI. They even did that with the reboot.
Was he consistently... I thought he was CGI once in a while in the reboot.
I think there might have been a few, like, walking shots where it was CGI, but all the close-ups
mostly
were actually
animatronic. It's creepier that way. It's a doll. Yeah.
But yeah, whenever they cut to someone who is clearly a stunt performer or a child in a suit, that's a little...
Throws it off a little bit. I reminded of the Puppet Master movies from Charles Band and some of the better earlier Puppet Master movies.
Stop motion.
There's some stop motion. It's not all... It's usually a marionette. It's usually just a puppet, but every once in a while you'll just see Blade jump off a bed on his own and walk towards the camera. That shot freaks me the fuck out.
That one shower's waving the knife.
That one shot is fucking epic. It's everything.
Really, it's really fun.
I forget if that's one or two, but it's great.
I know one of the puppets in Puppet Master is called Pinhead. This big bruiser puppet with, like, a little tiny head.
Yeah.
And occasionally...
he has giant hands.
Giant hands.
That's his gag.
With fingerless gloves.
You,
and he strangles you. and they'll cut to like close-ups of the hands, and he can like manipulate stuff. And of course, they get an actor's hands to do that. And
in the close-up, yeah.
You look at some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, and you see the actress. They got it's the same actress playing the hands in all of the movies.
Yeah,
and she gets to like punch people in the face with this puppet over her arms. Like, yeah. Thwacking people, that's really fun.
Yeah, it's awesome. But again, consistency is all I ask.
But
that's why the Muppets are fine.
The consistency is fun. There is that kind of uncanny effect with Super Marionation because the puppets are given human proportions.
Yeah.
So when you see a human in their place, it's not so off-putting because the puppets also have human proportions.
It is and it isn't.
If like they tried to do that with the Tracys in Thunderbirds because their proportions are a little different, and you put a live-action actor like with a big head or something,
it definitely wouldn't work.
That would have been really weird.
It would have been worse. I'll give you that. And again, one of the gags though, and I think this is the thing that really helps, because again, the idea is that Matthew shrinks for no other reason than because it's cheaper. That way, like, they're saving so much money on it. I'm sure they thought it was clever, but it is. But it's, you're saving money. Whenever there's a bit where Matthew as a little 1 foot tall super spy interacts with something normal, it works because I believe everything. Because
he looks like a puppet, and that's
there's at least two episodes in which Matthew is attacked by a dog, and it's a real dog.
Yeah.
One time I think it's a bulldog, and the other one it's like a mastiff or some big dog. And
I'm really glad they didn't make a puppet dog.
Oh yeah, it wouldn't have worked.
That would have been weird.
But like, there's a bit where he's like in a backyard, hiding inside a doghouse. And he's just like got his arm around the dog, like we're friends at that point. Like, and it's just a doll. That's like clearly been like hooked around like a dog's collar, and it's fucking adorable. But I believe in the reality of that because we've got scale, you know. Like I believe in the scale of it, and it makes sense within the context of the story. Being a doll doesn't necessarily always make sense in the context of the story. Anyway, let's just burn through a few more of these episodes just so we can be thorough about this. Let's see here. To Catch a Spy is where there's a prison break.
Wasn't that the one where a guy's hiding out at like a billionaire's house?
Yeah.
And they're going to like airlift him out by some futuristic device, like some sort of futuristic helicopter.
Yeah, I think that's the first one where Matthew has to like fight a dog.
Yeah, and that's one of them. He has to sneak into this estate. You know what I think is missing from Secret Service, actually, is like a consistent enemy organization.
Yeah, we need like...
like a SMERSH or something.
What was it in Get Smart? Chaos. Chaos was in Get Smart. Yeah, it's always just generic bad guys.
I don't want the same organization every episode.
No, but you want someone to fall back on, and you should make something up. It's more fun that way. You don't want to just be like, you know, the French... they're always after us. You know, like, just pick some random country.
Who's the bad guy? France. Why not?
I agree, though. I think it would give the bad guys a consistent personality. Mm-hmm. But the next episode is called The Feathered Spies. This is a fun one. Some spies have figured out a way to get, like, a whole bunch of information on, like, brand new, like, airplanes and, like, aeronautical equipment and weapons. And they can't figure out how they're doing it. And it turns out they're attaching cameras to pigeons.
He's a pigeon fancier.
Yeah, and they're going to use the pigeons to blow up the planes.
There is a certain category of nerd.
Okay.
That doesn't really exist anymore. And
the pigeon nerd?
The pigeon fancier is one of them.
So there
was because Bert from Sesame Street was a pigeon fancier.
That's true, he was.
Ghost dog, pigeon fancier.
Yeah, the bad guy in The Suicide Squad.
That's right, he was a bird fan. He like had that cage of that little aviary in his estate.
I think that was the bad guy. It was someone in Suicide Squad.
One of the bad guys.
Yeah.
That's not a plot point so much anymore.
Now,
the Suicide Squad, but that's kind of like incidental. It was meant as like a symbol of his decadence.
Yeah. But yeah, it used to be, that would be more of an incidental plot point. And like in New York, there would just be, I think John Wick, didn't Lawrence Fishburne have been?
Oh, that's right. He did. Yeah. Okay. So I guess
it's a few, but it's not as common as it used to be though. It used to be relatively
The idea of being really into pigeons is something that I have seen in media a lot from earlier media a lot. And I think it might all stem from, of all people, Charles Darwin, the original pigeon fancier. And if you've ever read Darwin, first of all, sorry.
he's a bit dry.
Dry like the Sahara.
Open with a joke, Charles.
Charles Darwin was hired to be like the conversationalist man to keep the captain company on like long ship voyages, and he was fired.
Yeah,
it's like he can't just talk to guys.
Yeah, it was weird choice for that job, but.
But yeah, Charles Darwin was into pigeons, and because he was into pigeons, he noticed, wait a minute, why are the nostrils slightly bigger on this pigeon and not on this pigeon? And that's when he started to kind of get the germ for evolution.
Thanks, pigeons.
I'm not kidding.
It's all because of pigeons. The next episode is called The Last Train to Buffler's Halt. This is where it's kind of a Great Train Robbery kind of riff. Someone steals
a little bit more action in this one.
They've stolen like $1 million in pound notes, and it's on a train trying to perform a getaway. Stanley Unwin and Matthew are on the train, and the train, of course,
it's a runaway train.
It becomes a runaway train, and they have to divert the train, and. It's fun because there's a lot of train models on this one, you know, and they put a little extra effort into this one. Like there's a lot of new sets and stuff like that. Yeah.
Speaking of nerds that aren't around anymore, the people who memorize train schedules,
Train Spotting,
which I think
it's called Train Spotting.
I think is a little bit more of a specifically English phenomenon.
My dad was really into trains.
All right,
we had Brio train sets, like those wooden trails. Yeah. Those are so great.
HO scale.
Yeah, those are fun. We brought them out every single Christmas, and we'd build a train around the tree.
Yeah, my sister did that as well. She had an HO model. I wasn't allowed to touch it. I have an older sister. You have an older sibling. You can't touch their stuff.
All right, the next one is the golfing episode, and this one's kind of stupid.
oh, I like the golfing episode.
It's fun, but it's kind of stupid.
Well, I like the conceit that bad guys are communicating via golf ball.
Okay, so the idea is that bad guys have figured out that various people in the intelligence service in England are basically shooting the shit and kind of letting classified information slide as they golf. So they have replaced some of their golf balls.
They've tunneled underneath the golf course.
Yeah, they got
instead of these little spy openings lab underneath the golf ball holes.
Yeah,
where they can take out of a golf ball and replace
the golf
it with
their balls
own.
have little tape recorders inside them, and when the golf ball goes in the hole, the golf ball then quickly disappears and is replaced by another ball, and then that golf ball is removed, opened up, and then they hear top secret spy communiques. The solution to that is to tell those guys to stop doing that shit. They're clearly terrible at being intelligence officers. Stop talking about shit, and at the very least, stop going to this golf course. But of course, they also have to catch the bad guys, and so it all boils down to Stanley Unwin deciding to engage one of the government types in a game of golf, and instead of hiding an audio recorder in the golf ball, he hires a timed explosive.
Yes.
But he's got to get it in the hole at exactly the right time, and wouldn't you know it, he like pitches it into the rough. And if he doesn't get it into the hole, like if he doesn't pull like this impossible Caddyshack 2 shot, he'll blow up instead of the bad guys, and that's fun.
Yeah.
It's kind of stupid, but it's very fun.
They managed to wring tension out of a priest playing golf, all right? That's kind of fun. To repeat, this is a very quaint program.
Yes.
It rings thrills out of very very country lo-fi kinds of things.
Yeah, like for example, Runaway Weapons of Mass Destruction Robots, which is the next episode, Recall to Service. There is a computer automated tank.
It's a tank, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a saboteur who sets it to like run amok and like destroy all of England. And Father Stanley Unwin has to find a way to like fix the programming on the fly in this like punch card kind of machine, and stop the bad guys by killing them, you know, priest style.
Thou shalt not kill, except.
The Bible's kind of hazy on that, actually. It'll say it flat out here, but over here it's kind of fine. Be honest.
Pardon?
It's in there.
Well, I don't remember. I can't quote a passage where murder is advocated, but They say thou shalt not kill a couple of times. I'll go with that.
They also say an eye for an eye, but okay. Moving on.
No, that's not a command to humanity.
I didn't say it was a command to humanity. I'm just saying it's in there.
And
I just said it's in there.
And
it's in there.
The phrase eye for an eye is not a call for you to do justice.
Okay.
It's a call for the punishment to fit the crime.
Yes.
If you take an eye, you don't kill them. Mm-hmm. If they take an eye, you take an eye. Doesn't That's the idea. It's about equity. It's okay. Not about revenge.
I apologize. Listen, I'm going to apologize
right
really,
now. It's really, really misinterpreted.
I'm apologizing right now. I was just pursuing it for the purposes of humor. Right. I apologize. I'm just going to backtrack. And we're going to let it go. Okay?
The phrase eye for an eye is really misused. It's
a lot of things in the Bible are really misused.
Absolutely,
which is kind of my point, is that you can kind of cherry pick it, and some people take the wrong message, and they think it does justify some bad stuff.
How about this? It's an old book of history and stories, and written by authors from thousands of years ago.
Sure is.
Most of them weren't necessarily firsthand observers of the history in that.
Yeah.
So it
stands to reason
that
you want to take some of it with a grain of salt. Like our next episode of The Secret Service, where Father Stanley Unwin has heat stroke and falls asleep.
There's some racist imagery in this one.
But it's
a fun premise. He falls asleep and he gets to have a dream where he does bigger spy stuff. He's a little bit more like James Bond in this one. So he gets to fly around and go to exotic locations.
In the opening, he is working, he's maintaining his Model T. And the old lady who works for him says, shouldn't you at least be wearing a hat or something? You've been out in the sun a really long time.
Her name is Mrs. Appleby, by the way.
Thank you, Mrs. Appleby.
That's Sylvia Anderson.
Thank you. She's like, you should wear a hat. And this is something I've learned, actually, because I got like a bald patch now. And not that long ago, I was forced to like sort of be outside for a long time.
I got burned right on the bald spot.
Well, I got burned. And well, it actually like it just it affected me more. It actually like really took it out of me. So that's something I learned the hard way. Stanley Unwin gets heat stroke and he has to like basically just take a load off for a day. And he has a dream in which he is given medical supplies to send to Africa, and in order to get to Africa, he has to fly his Model T, which is now a plane. Which is a very cute image, very chitty chitty bang bang.
Absolutely, he lands there. Yes, like I said, it's
some
about
bit
as
with unpleasant
the
images.
The African characters are about as sensitive as the ones you'd see in King Kong. You know, they're
which is to say, not at all. Yeah, so that part isn't great, but there are some cute bits where like. The bad guys send fighter jets after him, and they find out it's like, yes, we must take out the interlopers. And it's like, I don't know if we can do that, sir. They're flying a Model T. A Model T! God help us all. We only have 5 jets. Like, they're all screwed because he's flying a Model T. Lot of really cute imagery in there, but yeah, the racist stuff really.
It really
sinks the episode.
It sinks the episode. I appreciate, though, that this is, like, maybe the one character episode.
Mm-hmm.
We don't learn a lot about Father Stanley Unwin. He just does his job.
He's
a kindly old priest.
We get to see inside his subconscious a little bit and see the things that he values. There's also a hint, at least, because at the end of his mission, he's like, oh, yes, well, congratulations, you've delivered the supplies, and you're now, here's your reward. And his reward is he wants to take a nap, and it's like, of course, well, come on in, and he's home.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Appleby is there, which suggests a certain almost romantic attraction to Mrs. Appleby, like a little, certainly a connection.
Well, friendship, anyway.
I think it's a little bit more than friendship. Maybe it's more familial than romantic. But regardless, he clearly values her, and it's really important to him. And so that's kind of sweet. So we learn a little bit. Dream episodes, a lot of people write off dream episodes because they don't actually happen.
Mm.
But I would argue that as long as you learn about the characters, they count.
Yeah.
And aside from finding out that Stanley Unwin is racist, which sucks, the character, I have no idea about about the man, but the character in the show, little racist. Apart from that, this is a cute little episode, but you know, can't really get past that, can you? The next one is called The Deadly Whisper.
I wanted to share a little, I wanted to share this series with my son. He's 7. I thought, that'd be fun. It gets to see the little puppet characters.
Uh-huh.
There's something inside every child, I think, that could respond to that. And he walked in right during those racist scenes.
It's the exact wrong time.
It was like, hey, Dad, what are you watching?
The only episode you don't want him to see.
Okay, we're gonna have a talk.
Gotta explain this.
That's not a nice way to pick people.
I'm proud of you for taking the opportunity to turn into a learning moment, even though it was obviously inopportune. But I'm proud of you for that. That's good. Rather than just, we won't talk about this, which I think some people wouldn't.
Yeah.
The next episode is called The Deadly Whisper, and this one, like a lot of episodes of this show is about...
sound rifle.
Well, a lot of episodes of this show are about how the British government is making a lot of weapons of mass destruction and bad guys are trying to steal it. And it always weirds me out. There's so many, like, shows and movie series and comics or whatever where they invent these giant weapons of mass destruction, but no one ever uses them. Like, in this one, we've got an ultrasonic rifle that can, like, shoot sound waves at things and blow up planes, which, yeah, that would be useful in war. Not ethical, but useful. You never see him use it after this, though. Like, it seems to work just fine. You think that would be standard issue.
Take it back and put it on the battlefield.
Yeah, why do we never see that robot tank? I realize we've got some, like, kinks to work out with the guidance system, but it mostly works. Like... we always do this. Okay, we invent these giant pieces of technology, and then we never use them.
They ran out of funding.
Such a waste of money. Like, well, what's a waste of money? You funded them. They work. You ran out of funding right when we're about to go into mass production? It's terrible.
I think I prefer that they be taken out, especially if a priest is the one defending them.
I agree. Oh, I agree. Yeah. I'm just saying from the show's internal logic.
There's a film that came out a couple of years ago called Hacksaw Ridge, where Andrew Garfield played a Christian pacifist who did not want to touch weapons during World War II,
but he
still
did
wanted
assist.
To contribute in the war effort.
Mm-hmm.
And that film never really gets into the nitty gritty of pacifism or the ethics of war from a Christian standpoint.
No, it brushes up against them and then it just decides
it
not to really
it up,
deal with
but
it.
But it's more about sort of his personal struggle.
Yeah.
Terrence Malick's A Hidden Life does that instead.
Much better. Yeah. That's about sacrifice. That's about
principles.
Yeah.
The Secret Service doesn't have a lot of theological discussion.
A lot of episodes end with Stanley Unwin having just destroyed, super spies in giant explosions or whatever.
I get
then
the
going back
to
his parish and then reading a psalm that kind of reminded him about that. Recently, I shrank a guy and it kind of reminded me of Psalm 23:13,
which reminds me rather of our Lord Jesus.
Yeah.
Who was very small at one point.
Let's see here. The next one, that was Deadly Whisper. The bad guys capture the scientist's daughter to force him to do it, but then they save the girl.
Hostage situation.
The next one's called The Cure. And this one, in which an evil assassin goes to a health clinic. And Father Stanley Unwin has to go to a health clinic, too. And they're feeding him, like, nothing but carrots. And it's like, health food really sucks. It's about like a killer food additive. That's what the episode's about.
Right.
Not a lot of respect for medical, health institutions in a lot of movies and shows of the era, but...
I think, because this is like it's like a spa, right? It's not like a traditional hospital.
It's considered, it's considered kind of a... But the point is this, they treat it like it's a crock. And indeed, there were a lot. There were a lot of various health fads over the years, many of which are still going, that are not really based on real medical science. They're just they're there to con you out of money.
Yeah.
There are also good healthcare clinics that actually do care and want you to get better. But in movies, we almost always see the bad ones. And indeed, I probably would be suspicious of anyone someone tried to send me to.
Yeah.
Perhaps only because of shit like this, though. I honestly don't know.
There are still some that we just sort of say really, really casually. Like, I'm going to get some dark chocolate. There's antioxidants in that.
Yeah, like...
Oh, is that... has anybody ever been hospitalized for being too oxidized? It's... oxidants are... they're free-floating radicals in your system. They're not necessarily... part of your system, but I don't think there's any kind of sound medical backup to prove that they're super detrimental.
Yeah.
I mean, they might not be great, but they're not. So if you're going to eat dark chocolate, eat it because you prefer dark chocolate.
Yeah.
Don't pretend like your chocolate has medicinal value. It's chocolate. It's fun.
The next episode in airing order, I think we watched this in a slightly different order, was School for Spies, in which Father Stanley Unwin and Matthew investigate A bunch of military installations have been exploded, but there seems to be no connection other than literally a school that trains spies, which you'd think would exist.
Yeah.
But they train mercenaries for hire. They don't actually work for a particular government. And they just farm their people out to whoever wants them. And much like Father Stanley Unwin, they've decided that the perfect cover is a priest. So a bunch of priests are seen running away from military installations that are just blown up. And one recently got in a car accident right afterwards. So Father Stanley Unwin goes to see him in the hospital.
This one is like barely in my brain. I think I watched this one like at two in the morning.
We watched this one just now.
Well, oh, wait, this
one? Lily watched this right in front of me.
Oh, no, wait, that wasn't this one, was it?
It was.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's like, it's really, it's kind of convoluted. But basically, because this one assassin's in the hospital, Stanley Unwin, who already is a priest, decides to go undercover as an explosives expert, even though he knows nothing about explosives, and he has to fake his way through it with Unwin ease. And then they stop those bad guys.
I just watched this one and I don't remember it.
Yeah. The next one's called Mayday Mayday, in which Unwin is assigned to protect the King of Moldovia.
Not Moldova, but a fake country. One of my pet peeves. Don't make up a country. I know geography, but
And he has a brother who is trying to assassinate him and take over the throne.
This is the most violent episode.
It's pretty heavy. Actually,
has like a lot more gunfire, and we actually get to see puppet characters like die on camera.
Well, and one of them, I forget if he dies, but one of them gets taken out in a pretty brutal way. So all of these episodes, there's Matthew walking around like, you know, like 1 foot tall, looking like a horror movie character, like with, you know, just absolutely just like weird, creepy, like jumping out of cabinets, going ah, and stabbing you in the face, I assume. And
Matthew is stabbing people. He's just chasing
after Karen Black. So there's at no point in almost any of these episodes does anyone actually see him. It's really rare. He's usually completely incognito. In this episode, there's an assassin who's trying to kill the leader of this country, and he sees Matthew and he yells, "It's a demon! A demon!" And then he jumps out of a window and presumably dies, which is a hell of a plot point.
Yeah.
Anyway, he saves the king, and this is also an episode where they pull out that old chestnut where the pilot of an airplane has been taken out, and Father Unwin has to land the plane.
Take control of the plane, and it's a good, tense, pretty amusing.
And the last one, this is actually, I think, my favorite episode. This is the last one to officially air. It's called More Haste, Less Speed.
And this is the counterfeiting episode.
But it's also kind of like
Well, it's almost
like a slasher movie in a way, or like some kind of like weird.
Well, there's a lot of double crosses going on. This feels a little bit more like a mystery novel.
Yeah.
And so there, one team of bad guys has one half of a, and I think it's American currency.
It's American currency. They have the front side of American currency,
a $1 bill.
You have a plate, so you can
print the one side, but another group has the other side, and it's about a matter of getting the plates together, but once they are together, which of the bad guys is going to abscond and betray the other ones?
And who's going to have what percentage? And everyone's like staying in this house. And if Matthew and Father Unwin hadn't actually shown up, I'm pretty sure all of these people would have just killed each other.
Yeah,
because they're constantly betraying each other. Well, one of them like locks everyone in the basement to die, like Edgar Allan Poe style. And then there's like a huge car chase. And in this one, Stanley Unwin and Matthew are shrunk, and so is the car.
Yeah.
So they're constantly...
They were shrunk against their will, weren't they? Or did they shrink it on...
I think they did on purpose, because the idea is they're manipulating the events so that these people will betray each other more and try to kill each other more without realizing anyone is manipulating them, because they're constantly doing things like moving things around or spreading information or whatever. And so these people have no idea that this tiny priest is trying to destroy them. And then it leads to a really elaborate car chase in which people are driving around, crashing their car, getting on a motorcycle, while this tiny and miniaturized Model T is like zipping around construction sites and stuff like that. And eventually there's like they get in an airplane, but they realize they don't know how to fly it. And they start like zooming around, and then someone falls out of the airplane, presumably dead. And then they crash into a barn where everyone else is. And it's like, it's fucking weird. And the way that it is presented is kind of creepy. Like, it's almost out of a giallo. Just in terms of, like, how awful all the characters are. And how they're trying to murder each other. I really like that episode. That's a very... The tone is unlike the other ones. It's a little darker.
It's a little darker, and it's one of the few episodes where the villains have character.
Yeah.
The villains are usually just spy bad guys.
Yeah,
they're kind of indistinguishable.
I think they reused the puppets a lot of the time just because there was generic bad guy puppet.
Maybe so. I do admire that they... the number of puppets they built. They didn't just have like two or three and then they just like swapped out the wigs. They sculpted new faces for a lot of them.
They didn't cheap out, but I just feel like a lot of the bad guys were so generic that if they actually made new faces, they didn't need to bother.
Yeah.
It's just generic bad guy this week and then next week and then the week after that.
I don't know who the first author was to write a mystery novel with a member of the clergy as the investigator.
I know,
like there's a lot of series. There's like what was that Tom Bosley series that was based on an older Father McMurtry murders or whatever it was. But yeah, there's a tradition of mystery novels starring clergy members.
The Father Dowling mysteries,
which I think was based on like books from the '70s.
Mm.
This feels like that. The Secret Service feels like those novels. That kind of like pulpy, off the rack stories, but the priest is the reason we're here. What is their reasoning going to be like? Is the case clever? It doesn't really matter if we like the detective. I like Father Stanley Unwin. I like this idea of a very polite, kind, gentle priest. He's not a kung fu priest.
No.
He doesn't
kick ass
guns.
For the Lord.
Yeah, he's not grizzled or tough. He's not tortured, for goodness sake. He's just this kind old dude who does funny things, and he's based on this sort of comedic persona of the stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
And or I don't know if stand-up, just a comedian.
I think he did both, but yeah.
And I like seeing him get into merry adventures.
Yeah.
It's because it's a kids program, it's pretty gentle, even when things blow up, or even when it is kind of dark.
Mm-hmm.
You're only seeing the dolls, so the curse is kind of taken off.
It's a sweet show. It's a cute show. I wish I was more familiar with Stanley Unwin as an entertainer beyond this show, because I feel like...
Yeah, I don't know him at
that's the
all.
Thing is, I feel like this is a weird place to enter his filmography or his career, this one like weird side project that capitalized on his pre-existing fame. And we're not bringing that fame with us. We're kind of watching the show as its own thing. This could have been an entirely original character and it would mean just as much to us.
Yeah.
So we're not quite on the show's wavelength, what they're intending, but it's cute. And I think I've been thinking a lot the last few years, and we've talked about this on many a show in a variety of different contexts, but popular culture has a particular take on people involved in on all levels and all organizations in law enforcement.
Yeah.
Which is to say that with the exception of the occasional show like The Shield, they're all good.
The notion is that law enforcement, as it stands, is a venerable institution, and it is designed in a way that works, and it's supposed to work well most of the time.
And on the occasions in which bureaucracy perhaps gets in the way of catching an actual bad guy, well, in that case, your hero is allowed to completely break the law because they are paragons of moral virtue, and if they have to do it, it is therefore good.
It's the superhero thinking. They're good guys.
Yeah.
So what they do henceforth is good.
Yeah, even if it's bad. I don't think we've done a very good job of reckoning with that and how that creates an image in our head of law enforcement that is at best unrealistic and at worst dangerous, because it suggests that they are something that they are not. And in the last week or so, this episode is being released on May 28th, 2022, after a particularly disastrous incident in Texas, which we won't go into great detail, but suffice it to say, none of us are particularly happy with how the police handled it. I think we're disillusioned with a lot of people who would be considered heroes. And when I'm watching something
that is in media,
which is in media, when we're watching, for me, when I watch like a cop show, It's really hard for me to get on board with the idea. When I'm watching a Bad Boys movie, really hard for me to get along on board with the idea that what they're doing is cool, because usually it's unrealistic in the extent that A, I don't believe you'd actually put yourself in harm's way to save people anymore, and B, you're breaking a ton of laws.
Yeah, there's a lot of destruction in a movie like that.
Yeah, but
I prefer something like Law and Order, which, you know, same problem. We're still venerating cops and looking at police work as kind of an unexamable institution.
Yeah, yeah.
But in something like Law and Order, still a fantasy. Mm-hmm. It's not realistic.
There's some based on reality.
It takes place
elements,
in the real world,
like,
but it is a fantastical show.
Yeah.
There's at least this notion that there are committed detectives who aren't breaking rules. They're just trying.
Some people are trying.
Trying to do it by the book, and even though, you know, however unrealistic that might be.
Yeah.
And however damaging that may be to sort of the notion of police work in general.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, we are seeing nobility at work,
right?
Not destruction in the name of nobility.
Indeed. But my point, I bring this up not to bring everyone down or not to make, you know, a lofty point, but because I was thinking about this a lot when I was watching The Secret Service, because The Secret Service, it's a fictional, you know, spy organization, Bishop. It's a show about a stand-up comedian playing a priest who's a puppet who solves crimes with a shrinky guy.
Yeah, it's a little easy to detach from this.
Exactly my point. It is easier for me to detach and watch this show and appreciate it as a fantasy than it is for me to watch most other cop shows right now, and even some superhero stuff, because this is clearly Twee. You described it as Twee. Great example. You can only take this so seriously. It is clearly light, frothy. The concept is nonsense. The presentation is nonsense, and you are invited to simply accept that and go with it. This is a fantasy in which a priest saves the day from James Bond villains using silly dialogue as his weapon of choice.
And
cute.
He doesn't kill. That's not their goal.
Nope.
You said there's like some collateral damage, but
some guys who die, but they're not trying to do it.
I also like to think like, oh no, a guy fell out of a plane. Yeah, he's a puppet. He'll fall. He'll be fine. Just glue his arm back on.
That's like the Lego movie. Like there's only so much damage can be done.
Yeah. Just put him back together again.
Yeah.
Even if somebody gets harmed, I don't picture like a bullet ripping through
their
bodies.
There's a disconnect. These are puppets. There's a disconnect here. And we're
also,
allowed.
The spy genre has a little bit of a curse taken off of it, as is. You know, spies, you know, you could argue they're essentially the same as cops, but the idea of spies is that they're called in for rather extraordinary circumstances.
Well, in movies, in reality, it's actually usually much more mundane than
This is the movie version of spies.
Yeah.
You know, James Bond is called in because there's another bazillionaire who has a death machine.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of those. He's not, like, doing five of those a week.
There's a few.
There's at least, there's 24 in toto, all right? That's all we've ever had.
I know.
And that's been since the 60s.
But there's always one more. There's always one more. There's always one more that's like following in their tracks. That damn Moonraker. Like, he had a good idea. I'm just going to finish the project.
Every 6 or 7 years, like, we call him in again. And that's all we ever need him for. So
yeah, basically, yeah.
The idea that a spy with a shrink machine, you know, he's taking care of some... It's a weekly show, but special circumstances.
Agreed.
He's not just sort of going out into the people and, you know, causing malfeasance.
Yeah. So anyway, it's a cute, weird show. It got canceled... Not because of ratings, although they shot themselves in the foot by not airing it in all the places that they could. And it didn't get canceled because, like, people didn't like it. Reviews were mixed, but, you know, it's a weird show. It got canceled because the producer watched the show after they'd already been making it for a while. They had 13 episodes in the can. And he got to the part where Stanley Unwin spoke Unwinese. And he said, people aren't going to be able to understand what he's saying. This is stupid. We can't sell this show. Especially overseas.
The selling point of the gag.
And so he canned it. And I'm like, yeah, that's like watching a Star Wars. Imagine if like a producer had gone Star Wars and say, you can't have laser swords. That's not a thing. Cancel it. We're not even going to release the fucker.
Or hiring Jim Carrey and complaining that he is a little too rubbery and energetic.
Yeah, like this is the selling. You're confusing the selling point for the flaw, which is weird because you'd think they would have agreed to make the show specifically because Stanley Unwin was famous. that's kind of the big deal here. I guess they were more interested in the marionation and didn't really think about that. But in any case, yeah, they thought it was just hard to understand, confusing premise, and difficult to sell overseas. The last one, probably true. I can't imagine this one being as successful in the Americas as maybe Thunderbirds or some of the other more broadly painted ones. Yeah, so it got canceled halfway through the first season. Possibly would have been the only season. That's how they made these.
Hmm.
If it was really successful, they might have done more. That was that.
That's it.
If it had continued, would have been the same episode every goddamn week.
Well, I think they would have had to throw it up eventually and introduce another supporting character, or Mrs. Appleby would have gotten a little bit more involved with it.
That'd have been fun.
Brought in some other, because he has the shrinking widget. They would have to had like another kind of widget, like maybe a flying machine or a.
I'm not convinced, honestly. I honestly think they would have...
Transformation where they can swap bodies, something like that.
I'm sure there would have been, like, a body-swapping episode that would have been funny, but, like, I guarantee you the format would have stayed the same.
Absolutely.
It would have been the same fucking thing. There's bad guys do a bad guy thing. Stanley and Matthew are called in. Matthew gets shrunk. Occasionally we'll dink around with that a little bit where Stanley Unwin or Mrs. Appleby gets shrunk, too.
Mm.
But usually Matthew gets shrunk. We stop the bad guys. There's some kind of... like, weirdly gigantic premise that in live action would have been, like, huge and expensive. But here we're going to do it cute with puppets, like, crashing a plane, derailing a train, that kind of shit. That's always fun. And then at the end, he'll lead a mass, and there'll be some kind of weird hymn. Like, oh, let's sing my favorite hymn. What on earth were those counterfeiters all about?
Oh, God, what on earth is those counterfeits about?
was this show canceled too soon?
This is one of those cases where I actually really like this show, but I like as much as we got.
Yeah.
I feel like it would have lost some of its specialness if we had too much of it.
Mm-hmm.
As it is, you can poke around, you can find it online. It has been released in high quality around the world.
It's been released on DVD.
To find here in the U.S., but you can probably find it a little bit easier in England. If you're one of our English listeners, I know we have several.
Mm.
Let us know how readily available a lot of the Jerry and Cillian Anderson stuff is. If it's like... if it's still just Thunderbirds, or if you can get like...
I know the Secret Service amongst Jerry Anderson fans is a bit of a black sheep.
Okay.
Some people consider it like, you know, a weird, you know, oh, it's the weird one, but we like it. Some people consider bad one.
I think it was the last Super Marionation show they did.
I think he did one in like the 80s or something afterwards. Like he brought it back a long time later, but it was
and they did live action stuff as well. Space 1989 is theirs.
Yeah. So you're saying it wasn't canceled too soon, but like it.
I'm saying it wasn't canceled too soon, but I do recommend it, and I think people should see this show.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on it.
I don't want to see 100 episodes of The Secret Service.
No, I can't imagine 100 episodes.
I want to see 13, and I'm happy with this little taste.
I honestly think even 26 is just pushing it. I think I think you can see them like kind of straining against the concept in 13, where it's like, I don't know if we have this many good shows out of this. But it's definitely cute, and I think even if you don't watch all of it, if you just cherry-pick the handful of episodes we said were notable, you'll see a cute, interesting, weird show. Again, great opening score. Love the opening score to pieces. Love it. But yeah, it's cute. Again, this is my first Super Marionation show I've watched in its entirety. I'm not sure I'm desperate to keep looking at it and finding more. I get it. I think a little bit better now, and I'm definitely not opposed.
Are you said you were a little bit lost in sort of the uncanny valley-ness of the puppetry?
Yeah, a little bit.
Is it so off-putting that you don't want to see more Super Marionation?
No, it's not.
Or do you like the puppetiness of it and the sort of disconnect from reality as a sort of pleasant fantasy place to put your head?
Both. It's a little bit of both, actually. Right. It's definitely not something I'm going to seek out because it gives me, definitely not nostalgic, I didn't grow up with it, but like comfort, or there's something about it that like really deeply connects with me on like a personal level, or even just I think it's so sweet I can just like enjoy it and like watch it for fun. It's definitely not something I'm going to be actively seeking out much of.
Okay.
But I'm glad I saw it because it's this weird like sort of it's like a whole shelf in the pop culture library I've never touched before. Okay. And I get to say, okay, well, I've seen some Super Marination. That's all the weird one that nobody talks about, but I saw some. And I think it's kind of neat. I appreciate it on a level. And maybe if there's like a particularly great show, like how many have you seen Super Marination shows?
Thunderbirds. Uh-huh. A lot of these are from my childhood.
I don't expect you to watch them all.
Joe 90,
last week.
Fireball XL5. Okay. I think I saw some of Supercar. I think I might be at...
Okay. Of those, and again, I realize you're going off of your memory.
Yeah.
And I realize Thunderbirds is the most popular one, but set that aside for a second. What is the best show? Like the actual best made show, good, such as they are, good stories, fun to watch.
They're all kind of equal in my head, actually.
Okay.
Earlier and later. The technology in the later ones is better. Okay. They actually got a lot better about sort of the miniatures. I think I like something like The Secret Service a little bit better just because of the realistic proportions.
Okay.
They're trying to make, like, it passes a little bit better, which makes the miniatures a little bit more exciting.
Okay. So this is actually, you think this might be your favorite?
My favorite are the movies. I like Thunderbird. Okay. I like Thunderbirds Argo, the movie, and I like Thunderbird 6, the movie.
All right.
I think you can rent just about anywhere.
Maybe at some point I'll watch those for fun. One movie. I'll give it a try and see if maybe with their throwing some extra effort at it, it'll really get me.
To warn you, though, if you're going to go with Thunderbirds Argo, know that movie... it is just this extended sequence of really slow-moving vehicle fetish. Thunderbirds is vehicle fetish anyway. It's about these fast machines, these giant planes. That's actually a lot of Sylvia and Jerry Anderson stuff. The first, maybe 7 minutes of Thunderbirds Argo are just the assemblage of a gigantic aircraft. Like, that's in pieces, and they're pushing the pieces around on an airport tarmac. And they're just very slowly inserting them and assembling them together. And it takes a long time. There's no music. It's just plain noises. And we get to see these things sort of fit together. And I think the idea is your awe as a young child is growing, watching this machine get larger and larger. But it's not. It's almost this weird, slow cinema contemplative moment of the Thunderbird airship being assembled at the beginning of Thunderbirds Argo.
Sounds like Star Trek the Motion Picture, yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, ooh, look at how big that is.
Yeah, but there's no score to accompany it.
Oh, no. God, that sounds awful.
So just steel yourself for that. The whole movie isn't that. Understand once that sequence is over and once things get started, it's still a little slow moving, but, at least other things are happening in Thunderbirds Argo.
Awesome.
Thunderbirds 6 has a faster pace. There's actually a little bit more going on. So if that one was boring to you, you can still watch the sequel and get a little bit more.
Awesome. All right. Well, that is it for Cancel Too Soon this week. Thank you everybody for listening. We'll be back in a couple weeks with our next episode, which is a sci-fi television series. Lasted only 6 episodes from the stars of Babylon 5 and Star Wars. We got Claudia Christian and Jeremy Bullock, the original Boba Fett, in Starhyke. Which, if you think it takes a long time to go to the end of the galaxy at warp 5, imagine walking. Takes a bit. No, this is a sci-fi series that I actually only just learned about, in which it's the distant future, and humanity has become an emotionless conquering race that destroys every alien species it finds.
That's the humans.
Yeah, the humans are the bad guys. And the captain of a human ship, played by Claudia Christian, encounters some heroic rebel reptile species that unleashes a new weapon that unleashes emotions onto humanity, and now everyone on the ship is dealing with having emotions for the first time. It sounds like an interesting premise, and I'm looking forward to checking it out. It lasted only 6 episodes in 2011, so we're going to check out Starhyke on the next episode of Canceled Too Soon. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, everybody, for supporting the show. Please subscribe if you haven't already. Thank you to all of our patrons in particular, without whom the show would not exist. If you would like to become a patron, we would love to have you, and you get a lot of exclusive stuff for your trouble. That is patreon.com/criticallyacclaimednetwork. You get to vote for future episodes of some of our shows. You get ad-free episodes of our shows. And depending on what tier you're on, you can get exclusive podcasts like Only the Best, where we review every Best Picture nominee ever, where we have All Our Yesterdays, where we review every single episode of Star Trek in order. We have commentary tracks. We have trivia nights with our patrons. It's a lot of fun. So head on over there if you want to help out the show. We sure would love to have you. If you want to talk about anything we discussed in this episode, do you remember watching The Secret Service? Either in its original run or perhaps in a rerun? Or do you remember watching any Super Mario Nation? Do you want to talk about anything we discussed on the show? Want to correct us about anything? Feel free to email us. Our email address is letters@criticallyacclaimed.net. We might read your email and answer it on an upcoming episode of We've Got Mail. Whitney, what is our P.O. box for those who prefer to write a letter the old-fashioned way?
Send us an actual... Well, first of all, attach it to a carrier pigeon. The ones you keep on your roof, you pigeon fanciers. Or you can put a stamp on it.
Luca would love that. Just send him pigeons. The pigeon, send my cat pigeons.
The pigeon leaves.
Not if Luca has to say.
Critically Acclaimed Network, P.O. Box 641565, Los Angeles, California, 90064.
Thank you. And, of course, we're on Twitter, at Critic Acclaim. I am at William Bibbiani.
I'm at Whitney Seibold.
And that's a wrap. We'll see you next season.